319-366-1600. All right, one last time for the 2025-26 season. Let's welcome in our friend Big Ten Ted. I guess this might be a victory lap, Ted. Three straight championships for the Big Ten Conference. Maybe the most unlikely hero to make it three in a row, Indiana beating Miami 27-21, capping off an incredible two-year run here and really setting them up, I think, for continued success in the future. We'll touch on all that and a whole lot more. But how are you feeling after a third straight championship, Ted?
It kind of feels a little bit sweeter considering who it was this year. You know, you get a blue blood like Michigan and Ohio State. You know, they win the title. You know, that's kind of come to, you know, Ohio State won it in 2014, and they win it 10 years later. Michigan, of course, has a lot of backing and support. But for a team like Indiana and for this Disney-like story to kind of be the third team in 3 years to win a championship, it kind of just shows the depth, especially at the top of the league right now, and how strong the Big Ten really is. And, you know, I was just kind of thinking, over the last 3 years, the teams have all looked kind of a little bit different. Of course, last year's Ohio State, they lost those two games and then made that run. But Indiana was just so efficient throughout the entire season. And, you know, they really, really played well in a lot of their games. You know, there really wasn't a down performance really much for Indiana this year. They always seem kind of at the top of their game going into every one of these contests. Obviously some more difficult than others, but yeah, the Big Ten has certainly established themselves as the king of the sport right now.
So I was going to ask you one of the first questions, like, what did you make of the season as a whole for Indiana? Cause last year, it was a great story. A lot of people pointed to the schedule. People pointed to how they fared against Ohio State. You know, they played Notre Dame, only lost by 10 in the mm-hmm. playoff, but there was still kind of this like vibe of, okay, good for you, Hoosiers. Let's see if you can do it again. And then they did it again. And went 16-0, the first team since, 1894 Yale to do that in a season. What did you make of just how they were able to take the experience they gained last year and turn it into this, which ended with a championship on Monday?
Yeah, it's so crazy about, you know, where a lot of these players have come from. You know, it's been kind of thrown around, hey, Indiana has no five stars, you know, kind of just absolutely shattering the blue chip ratio and all these other things that we thought was needed to win a championship, and kind of like redefining the mold. You know, throughout the season, I thought going into the season that they upgraded at quarterback. You know, you looked at what Fernando Mendoza had done at Cal, and you kind of, okay, if he gets plugged into this Indiana system, he's going to be better. I'm not sure if I thought Fernando Mendoza would win the Heisman Trophy. You know, I'm not sure if he would be that good, but that's kind of like what Indiana has really done over these last couple of years, is like you have, even after they've had success, you kind of develop this expectation of them, and then they just take it to another stratosphere, and that's kind of what happened with Fernando. But, you know, they certainly had some battles throughout the year. Of course, that game on the road at Penn State, you know, where they needed that toe-tap touchdown at the end. Of course, at Iowa, you know, where they got that late touchdown from Elijah Surratt to get the win on the road in Iowa City. And then outside of those close wins, especially like during those first two playoff games, how they're just able to go in there and just absolutely take care of business against Alabama and Oregon the way they did. And that's kind of like I called it during the season. I called it the Indiana Avalanche. And once that avalanche started coming, like Illinois experiences that early in the season. But when it started, it was so difficult to stop. And I think that game against Illinois, well, that was really the time that I first thought, oh, this Indiana team is something maybe a little bit better and different than I thought it would be coming into the season, where they beat them. Illinois was ranked ninth in the country at that time. They beat them 63-10. And, you know, at the time after that game, people are thinking, well, maybe Illinois is a little bit overrated, you know. But this ended up being a 9-4 Illini team, and they beat them by 53 points. So it's just a new superpower is developed, and it's been so much fun to be able to watch this team. They're so well coached, like this, and it's not just Cignetti, it's Shanahan and Haynes. The coordinators are they're fantastic. It's an amazing story. I think it almost kind of is right up there with one of the greatest stories in sports history. You know, you got to put, I think there's no question, it's the greatest story in college football history. But yeah, it's been it was such a fun season to be able to watch and just to see different guys step up. Charlie Becker, like first half of the season, he was essentially a special teams player. You come into the second half of the year, he has a big game against Ohio State. I think Penn State, he had a good, you know, and then he goes in the playoff, and all of a sudden he's the top weapon. So seeing all of these kind of storylines within kind of the big storylines with from the boys from Bloomington is it was fascinating to watch and follow this year.
There's been a lot of discussion, and I know Kurt Cignetti was asked this after the game on Monday night. What message did this run this year, but their rise to being a national champion over the last couple of years send to the rest of college football? What does it teach the college football landscape, other coaches, other players? What message do you think Indiana sent to the rest of the college football world? Not just, hey, this can be done anywhere, but about how to build a team and have success in this new age of college football.
No, man, this could be a 30-minute segment in and of itself. I called it the Indiana earthquake. It's like this happened right here. There are going to be programs in this very conference. There are going to be Wisconsin's and Minnesota's and Illinois and maybe Purdue's instead. You know, just all of these other programs that looked like, wait a minute, if Indiana put this together, lowly old Indiana, before this year, was the losingest program in college football history. Why can't we do it? Why can't we throw money at this? Why can't we hire all these guys and kind of replicate this formula? That's, I think, what everybody's going to do. And I think that's what everybody's going to try to do, especially these lesser programs right now. They're going to try to replicate this as much as they possibly can. And I think, by the way, I think this is good for the sport, where you have some of these teams where it's like, before it's like, hey, if we get to 9 or 10 wins and we win a bowl game, that's a successful season, and that's as good as it's going to get. But now having more teams having that aspiration to win a national championship, I think it's great. I think it's great for college football that everybody can kind of be lumped into that group. But I don't know how likely it is that something like this can be replicated. You need like a guy like Kurt Cignetti. And you look at the path that he took to becoming the head coach at Indiana, it's very unorthodox in how he's been able to do it. So teams are going to look to do that. I think it's going to shorten careers a lot like Nick Saban did, because there's going to be some of these other programs, whether in the Big Ten or not, that are going to look to try to replicate this model a little bit. And now, instead of like doing it, because Kurt Cignetti won a national championship in year two, now you have coaches get to year three and year four, they're only winning 7 or 8 games. They're like, what happened? We've invested the money. We hired a really good staff. We're doing this. We're doing that. It's nothing's happening. But because Kurt Cignetti won the national championship so quick, I think there's going to be the timelines are going to quicken, I think, for a lot of other coaches throughout the country, and a lot of programs are going to look for their version of Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah, I think
sometimes. Go ahead. Yep.
Well, no, I'm sorry to interrupt. I think you're absolutely right. I think the expectations, the 3-year window, is out the window, right? I mean, yeah, for lack of a better term, like, you used to be given, okay, 3 or 4 years to build the program, but now it's like microwaving success is the standard, right?
Yeah, it is, and that's the problem when something like this. When kind of something like this happened, you know, like I said, it was kind of the Saban effect and how quickly he rose to prominence in rebuilding Alabama at that time. But now it's so crazy because, you know, if you have an investment in money, you can flip a roster. That's the thing about a coaching change, because, you know, the portal, you know, if a coach leaves, you can have this additional window to be able to follow your coach and to be able to transfer and all that stuff. Like, if you built a really good program somewhere, you can just immediately overnight just completely flip your roster. And then the expectations, if you're coming over from somebody, even if it's like a Lane Kiffin going from Ole Miss to LSU within the SEC at that level, or it's going from like Cignetti did from JMU up to Indiana, you can bring those players with you. And if you've had success at that place, your expectation is like, oh, you're going to be able to elevate and the success. And now we're going to expect it a little bit quicker. I don't know if it took Cignetti like 4 years to be able to do it. I'm not sure if it would have that type of effect. But because he did it in 2 years at a program like Indiana, there's going to be a lot of coaches out there that are going to be feeling the heat in year one, especially in year two, to be able to flip this thing a lot sooner. So I think those are the two big things that I take away. the quickness, I think, in which the expectations are for incoming coaches, and then for all of these other programs to feel like, yeah, we can go out there and we can make this similar type of turnaround.
Couple more minutes wrapping up the college football season with Big Ten Ted here on 1600 ESPN. Contenders next year. I mean, it's foolish to say Indiana's not going to be in contention next year. I don't know how well you subscribe to way too early top 25s, but ESPN and everybody else has Indiana in their top 10 at least. ESPN had them number one, Oregon number five, Ohio State number six. I know Indiana opened as co-favorites to win the title next year. That shifted a little bit in the days that have followed. Indiana's got to be a contender for the Big Ten next year, right? I know it's way too early to think about that, but when you look at possible contenders for the 2026-27 season, Ted, where does your mind go?
Indiana is losing a lot of production. I think that's one thing that we have to throw out there right away. But you have to trust, like you said, you have to trust Kurt Cinetti and the staff that they're going to be able to do it. They bring in Josh Hoover from TCU. He's put up some really good production the last couple of years. You put him into this offense, I think he's going to succeed. He's tailor-made for this Mike Shanahan RPO-based offense. You bring in Nick Marsh from Michigan State. Right, he's a highly productive transfer wide receiver. So they have a really good transfer class right now. I believe it's the top transfer class in the Big Ten, if I'm not mistaken. But outside of Indiana, I think Oregon is a team that you got to watch. I mean, you're bringing back Dante Moore. You're bringing back your entire defensive line. You're bringing back a lot in the secondary. You're bringing in Coy Parrish, the safety from Minnesota. You're returning, I believe it's two starters on the offensive line, including Remington finalist and Iapanilalaulu. Like, they've got players all over the place. And if you look at this model, Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, these are old, experienced teams. And this is an experienced team that maybe Oregon has been building up to. Ohio State is a little bit, you know, we just kind of always throw them into this conversation. And they're still going to have Julian Sand. They're still going to have Jeremiah Smith. They're still going to be good there. But they're losing a lot in the transfer portal. They're one of the teams in the Big Ten that have the most departing players. So that's one where I'm like, okay, yeah, we just always kind of pencil them in there. But, you know, that's one I'd kind of keep an eye on that. Be like, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how things go. Their schedule maybe isn't the easiest as well. But, you know, Indiana's up there. Oregon's up there. I think Ohio State is certainly up there as well. Those were the three teams that made the college football playoff. If the Big Ten is able to get a fourth, I think that's where things get they get very interesting. USC is somebody that I would keep an eye on with Maiava returning. They had a nice 9-3 year this year. And then Michigan and Penn State with new coaches. Penn State is a manageable schedule. Michigan's is a little bit tougher, but I think Michigan can take another step maybe with Kyle Whittingham this year. Once you get down into that like fourth spot, I think things could get real interesting this year. And I think the Big Ten is going to continue to grow with its depth this season, this upcoming season.
Yeah, ESPN's way too early outside of the top three. I mentioned Indiana, Oregon, and Ohio State. USC was 13th. Iowa was 16th. Michigan 18th, Washington 19th, and Penn State 22nd. Hawkeye fans love to see Iowa mentioned anywhere, but a new quarterback replacing quite a bit on the offensive line and almost the entire defensive line. Some key defensive backs are gone. 16 might be wishful thinking, but you never doubt a Kirk Ferentz coach team. But I think that's a fair kind of look at least what we know at this point, January 22nd, yep. Looking way ahead to early August or mid-August, mid to late August and early September, right?
Yeah, Iowa's an interesting one because you mentioned losing Mark Gronowski. That got Hank Brown kind of on this roster. I think that they expect for him to step up this next year. But, you know, Kamari Moulton is going to be back. But you mentioned, you know, the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line. I think it's three starters they're going to lose up front from that group. Most, or if not the entire defensive line. And like the defensive backs have, like, you go all the way back. I was watching them in the NFL playoffs this past weekend, all the way back to Riley Moss. They've always had somebody, just an absolute killer in the defensive secondary, from Moss to Cooper DeJean, to Sebastian Castro, to Wampa, you know, all of these guys. Is Zach Lutmer maybe that next guy in the secondary? I don't know. But they got to find those guys. They got to find guys at some of these different spots. And it's just, but we just kind of, like we said, like with Ohio State, you just pencil them in to kind of be at the top there. you always kind of like trust that Kirk Ferentz and Phil Parker and this coaching staff is just, they're just going to find guys at these spots to kind of fit in to the Iowa way and the Iowa culture, and they're going to be just fine in that spot. But I've seen Iowa make great strides this year. Of course, with the Hawkeyes, it was about those close games, those very, very close games this year where they maybe almost could have made it over the hump. And we're very competitive throughout this entire schedule, and I don't anticipate them taking a sharp downturn. I think they're going to kind of remain, you know, where they've been these last couple of years.
All right, Ted, hey, appreciate you taking time all season long to talk here on the show. We'll look to catch up with you again in the fall. How about that?
Absolutely. This is my favorite thing to do every single week, so you know I'll be back.
Love to hear it. Appreciate it, man. Thank you. Big Ten Ted here on 1600 ESPN. Wrap it up the season. Always appreciate his time. And check him out on YouTube. He's been doing content here since the playoff ended, since the championship game. Got great content on YouTube, and follow on X at Big Ten Ted, doing lots of good work there. And you'll see him throughout the offseason as well. I was looking at the odds while Ted was talking there. I mentioned the championship odds for next year's college football champion. Indiana opened as co-favorites. I think that was at DraftKings. They are now second short. Well, tie. It's a tie for the shortest odds. Ohio State and Notre Dame, both plus 650. And then Indiana and Texas are both plus 700. So that's the way too early odds look. When it opened, it was Indiana and Ohio State, both 1 and 2 in those championship odds. That's at FanDuel. If you can shop around for better odds, if you want to place a wager this early, I'm not an expert. I personally would not, but that's on you. Don't take advice from me. That's on you. But Ohio State, Notre Dame have moved to the favorites here. Notre Dame, I think, is going to be pretty good. They've got kind of the fire behind them, right? The we got snubbed kind of fire. Marcus Freeman making that very clear in their end of season press conference. So we'll see how they do in 2026. Thanks again to Big Ten Ted for making the time to join the show throughout the season.